Business Weekly. Talk business. Do business. Business Weekly. Bring you the latest business, economic and financial news from around the country and tell you how they affect you. Business Weekly. Features inspiring South Indian entrepreneurs. Every Monday morning from 9:15 to 10 a.m. Business Weekly. Talk business. Do business. Only on Radio Miraya.
This is Business Weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the Business Weekly, a program that brings you the latest on business and entrepreneurship through discussing opportunities and challenges in South Sudan. My name is Helen Toby. Now, the banking sector is crucial to the modern economy in South Sudan, and it is significant to everyday activities, including business. Well, today we are going to focus our discussion on banking environment in the country and the role of women in the industry. We will be joined by Alam Chat, the head of diversified sector at the Stanbic Bank, to highlight more on this. And we will also have our entrepreneur of the week, who is Moses Yassin, a radio presenter who has ventured into poultry business. We'll get to know more about this later on the show. But first, let's start with our stories of the week. The Bank of South Sudan has directed all payments and monetary transactions by government institutions, private entities and businesses to be made in South Sudanese pounds. In a circular issued last week, Central Bank Governor Johnny Ohisa Damian said the common practice of making payments in foreign currency is undermining and threatening to erode public confidence in the country's legal tender. The governor warned that refusing to deal in South Sudanese pounds is punishable by law. Meanwhile, an economist welcomed the move by the central bank. Akol Nyok Akol says the order issued by the bank governor is long overdue and argues that this is the only way to create more demand for the local currency and maintain its value. The Council of Ministers on Friday approved the release of $4.5 million to defend a court case against telecom company Vivacell. Minister of Information and Government spokesperson Michael Makueluet said the money will be used to appeal against a foreign court demanding the country to pay Vivacell $1 billion in reparation. Vivacell had sued the government on claims that the information, telecommunication and postal services in the country illegally suspended its operations. The South Sudan Urban Water Corporation last week started distributing clean water to three payams of Juba, Katora and Munuki under a project supported by the Japan International Cooperation Agency, JICA. The distribution is being made through 120 water kiosks and 8 tankers filling stations. The distribution started with 3 days of free water supply at the kiosk and a half charge of £400 for tankers at the filling station as the corporation tests the system and provides on-job training for the personnel who will manage the operations. Residents will now pay a subsidized fee of £25 per jerrycan. And finally, traders are counting their losses after 3 boats were involved in a fire incident at Gabat area of Juba last week. Director of Civil Defense in Central Equatoria, Pascal Ladu, said the fire started on a boat carrying fuel. Ladu said few items, mainly goods, were recovered from one of the boats whose fire was contained. He noted that his team responded but got the boat floating on water and hence access to them became a challenge. That's all in the business stories over the week. My name is Helen Toby. Now today we are going to have our entrepreneur of the week first before we have our discussion of the day, which is about the banking sector in South Sudan. And many say that businesses give you more money compared to working in an office every day. And I don't know whether this is the case today, because we are joined by a presenter who has ventured into business and he's now doing poultry. Moses Yassin, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Mirai this morning.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Now tell us, have you completely left the profession of being a radio presenter and joining poultry?
I don't know. Anything can happen. But that, for now, I'm sidelining the media a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just to focus on farming.
Okay.
Probably 2 or 3 years. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What was the inspiration behind this business? Tell us more about what you're venturing in.
I always have a passion for farming. The person has been there growing up. You know, my parents bought farmers and they instilled the culture of hard work. And I got to, you know, experience farming firsthand. Like in the morning, you're taken to the farm, going to school, you're given a condition to first go to the farm, dig and run to school. So that has been in me. I see some need and I felt like, you know what, how about I feel that now that I know farming, how about I fill that gap, venture into it. There was some, I got fired up with the passion.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know what, I have to go for farming.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how the whole thing, that's how the whole idea started. And when I started, I was in the media for about, like, you know, my last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of a transition from the media to farming. And that's when I'm like, now I have to, you know, focus on farming, like full time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you have left radio presenting to farming full time.
Full time.
Okay. Can you tell us how a normal day for you as an entrepreneur looks like?
Well, it's fun though. It's challenging, but it's fun. I wake up in the morning, go to the farm because I have like 2 sites. Make sure that at least I do a lot of coordination, supervision, and directing. You know, the team to focus and to deliver. With the poultry site, it's very very technical. So I have to be there like most of the times. You know, making sure that at least the health of the birds is in place. You know, everything is in order. So it's a bit challenging. Waking up in the morning about 5, 6, I'm on the streets, you know.
I can imagine. When you were a radio presenter, weren't you going that early to the office?
I was doing a morning show, and so I used to go very early, about 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I got used to like this morning routine.
Right.
But again, there's a little bit of a gap because like with the media, I had like 4 to 5 hours giving it to the media, and the remaining hours I had it to myself. But now I had like almost like the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
To the farm. Sometimes I'm at the farm up to like 10 p.m. I'm still there, especially when we bring in new chicks. I have to sleep at the farm. I have to sleep at the site. So it's a bit, you know, it's different. But yeah, I'm loving the transition. I'm loving it.
To start a business, you need capital.
Yes.
You need some money to kickstart that business.
That's true.
Are you able to tell us how much you started this business of yours? And how did you get that money?
Okay, how I got the money, let me start with the last question. How I got the money, I did some savings. I did a small saving.
Mm-hmm.
I created an account, which is for the fund. It's like a Yassin Family Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been saving there. And
yeah.
I realized that I didn't get like a lot of emergency. So what I did with the money was to, you know, I didn't start like once, you know, like buying a land. It's challenging. I had to get like 6 plots in one. So I had to first buy the plots, relax. Took my time, like, now this land is doing nothing. How about I start something I need?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have like a specific amount saved to start it at once.
Okay.
You know, it was a process. So like, you know, start with the land, start with the construction, the building. I took about 5 to 6 months, you know, doing a single structure.
Mm-hmm.
I had to relax a bit until everything was in order, you know, bring in some machineries. The whole thing was in place. And then I'm like, no, you know what?
It yeah. sounds like a very big business. So how profitable is it?
I would say it is profitable. It is profitable. But again, it's capital intensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's capital and labor intensive. But say if you are consistent and you're able to keep up with the market, you're able to supply the market, you know, consistently, you'll be able to make some profit. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's profitable. I don't want to discourage someone who is having the passion, who want to join the industry. I would say there is money in it. You just
okay.
have to give it a try. But the start is always hard. you know, you won't be able to make money. Sometimes you go into a business and you're like, you know what, if I raise this number of chicken or if I have this number of acres, I'll be able to make this amount of money. Trust me, Helen, it's different. It's not the case. You know, you'll be like, okay, if I raise 10 chicken, that's about how much? Will I raise about 40 pounds or 40,000 or 50,000?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, you realize that it's not that easy. You know, you end up spending a lot at the start,
mm-hmm.
and you raise about 1,000 chicken and you don't even get, you don't see the money, and you'll be like, what? You don't see a lot. You'll be like, what's going on? So it's profitable. It's profitable, but it's challenging.
Okay, and it is a process.
Yeah, it is a process.
Okay, apart from the few challenges that you've mentioned, are there other major challenges that you're facing in terms of doing your poultry business?
I'll start with the mindset we have as a country. When I started the whole thing, a lot of people thought I'm not a Jinobi, I'm not a South Sudanese, and that was a challenge, because every time I go to the to Uganda to bring in chicks, and the challenge starts from the border. Mm-hmm. You know, these are agricultural goods and are supposed to be taxed and all that, but you find, you know, all these NRA comes here, there's a lot of checkpoints and all that you have to clear for that. One of the biggest challenge when it comes to the poultry farming, it's the ease of the feeds. We don't have feeds within, you know, you have to cross the border to import these feeds,
mm-hmm.
and their cost is way high. You have to transport, you have to clear them through these borders, these lines, and that makes it one of the biggest challenge. With the poultry, I would say the second challenge so far is the use of diseases. We don't have, like, you know, a lot of guys who are trained vet officers,
mm-hmm.
who can help in treating these birds. So it's one of the biggest challenge. I remember there was a time we lost about 1,640 birds.
Oh,
because of
that
a
is a
slight,
very big number.
That's a lot,
mm-hmm.
because of a slight outbreak of a disease, and we could not contain it immediately. We had to look for a vet officer. It's one of the things we had in our plans to hire, but we had. It took us time to secure one, and it was one of the biggest. You know, I would say it was one of the biggest challenge. So we're trying to minimize it.
Okay.
To be honest, there are a lot of challenges, but I think so far on the poultry side, feeds and diseases, I would say, are two of the major challenges affecting us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how can some of these challenges be overcome? You said that one of the issues is taxes at the borders while you're bringing in the feeds and other things that you require for the business.
Yes.
Do you think there is a solution to this? Can the government do something about this?
There is.
For the local entrepreneurs?
There is. That depends on what goal the government has or what plan it has for the young people, and especially for the agriculture sector. There is something the government can do when it comes to policies, enacting policies that are practically, you know, effective on ground. Because you see, young person like me at 29 years, you're trying to venture into this. We expect some, you know, some justice. We expect the government to be lenient on us when we venture into something that is so crucial. Because agriculture is a backbone, and if we don't do something as a country, then it's going to be very hard. We'll continue relying on food coming from outside. So to me, I see there is something to be done. Also, on other stakeholders, you know, trust me, there are a lot of young people who really want to venture into this,
mm-hmm.
but most of them don't have the starting capital. Banks are not giving loans. Young people don't have collateral to even ask for this loan in the first place. I think stakeholders have a lot to do in terms of supporting young people, because when you see right now, most of the support going into the citizens' hands is in terms of humanitarian aid. I mm-hmm. feel like it's high time we make that transition from giving humanitarian aid to actual development, supporting some developmental initiative, which is really lacking. I have to share a shout out to few who are really trying to see the aspect of development, but others are still you know, counting on that. So it's going to be hard.
And so there is a lot of efforts that need to be done.
That's
to ensure
true.
That youth venture into businesses.
That's true.
Because not everyone has the opportunity to get employment.
That's true.
Okay.
And trust me, a lot of young people right now see agriculture as a sector or something for the illiterate, the poor, and the losers, which is not the case. That's a mindset that we need to change as a country. And I have to say a shout out to Mirai, because you guys are shining a light on agriculture as a business.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to the common belief that, you know, agriculture is just for the losers and the illiterate. You know, mm-hmm. I've got my own degrees and I'm into it. I would say I'm the handsome, I'm the youngest and I think the most handsome or sexiest farmer in the country. No doubt about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've not seen other farmers, so I cannot
most of them are old.
I cannot comment on
most
this.
Of them are old.
Okay, you talked about young people engaging in businesses. How can you, as a young farmer, encourage young people to engage in businesses out there?
I've used my platform properly. I've used my platform. I've said this over and over that agriculture is profitable, and young people shouldn't look at agriculture based on the common beliefs we have in the country. They should be looking at agriculture as a business, because you're looking at, you know, you're looking at the food coming in, you're looking at the value chain. We should be able to look at, okay, if I produce, because when we talk about agriculture sector, we're not only looking at the production aspect of it, we're looking at people who can add value, people who will venture into production in terms of, you know, processing this food.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are a few companies I see who are processing this food, but can we have young people coming to add value? If I'm producing chicken, I expect somebody to be processing this chicken. I expect somebody to be, selling this chicken, mm-hmm. coming to some outlets to distribute. I expect, a lot in terms of agriculture. It's a linkage, and I see that line that young people can tap into.
Okay. Yeah. Now, talking about your business, which is now poultry, how can people get to you?
We're in Juba. We're in Juba Poultry Farm. It's the Yassin Farms. It's called the Yassin Farms Limited. You can find us on social media, on different platforms. Of course, we have got our contacts. You can easily access us. I have to be honest. We are also setting up a farm in the other site. I won't mention in Yei. We're setting up a plantation farm just to at least help us, you know, minimize on the cost of feeds. So yeah, it's a maize plantation. Inshallah, 2 weeks from now we'll be having at least 25 acres ready for plantation.
Okay.
Just waiting for rain, and good enough in Yei, you know, rain is not like in Juba. So we hope by the end of next month we'll be having rain, and mm-hmm. we'll be able to kick off with a plantation. So yeah, it's easy to get us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now your business, the Yassin Farms, started recently, and you were all over media. People were saying, "Oh, this radio presenter has left the profession and now joined poultry business." Where do you see yourself in terms of your business in the next coming year, or maybe 5 years from now? Where do you see yourself?
To be realistic, I think the country should give me 2 years with the necessary support, with security in place, with good infrastructure in place. I would say I should be able to supply Juba with quality eggs, you know, fresh and healthy, affordable chicken, the whole of Juba, and also be able to supply Juba with coffee, with maize, you know, with pineapple, and a couple of agricultural produce.
Okay.
In 2 years.
Okay.
So that includes 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Moses Yassin, for joining us today and sharing with us your story about your business.
Pleasure, man, and thanks for having me.
Okay. What is your last message to the people out there?
Well, to the government, it's high time you invest in agriculture. We hear about the Youth Enterprise Fund, which is part of the agreement. I think this should be passed, and to really help not only me, but a lot of young people across the country. When we empower these young people by giving them something, I believe they'll be able to be positive and productive. These issues of young people engaging in negativity won't happen. I also want to see a lot of the financial institution, the banking sector, mm-hmm. Should be able to support young people in terms of, like, at least making it easy for us to access loan. I know it's challenging. They have a reason why they're not doing that. But yeah, they should also look at the other side. To young people, stop relying on these white collar jobs. There's a lot we can do as long as you're able to make money out of whatever you do. Yeah, farming is one of the sectors, and I want to call on the young people to really go into farming. There's enough land, other areas are secure. Some places have, you know, infrastructure like Bor right now, and I want to see a lot of young men from Bor tapping into this. Guys from Terkeka, you guys have the road, you guys have water. How about you make use of that? That is how we can move this country forward. To the humanitarian sector, we want to see a lot of you also allocating some funds to, you know, young people, especially the agriculture sector. That is a way we can really, you know, mean development and bring a positive change or transformation to this country.
Well, thank you very much, Moses Yassin, for joining us on Radio Miraya's Business Weekly program this morning.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. You're listening to the Business Weekly on Radio Miraya. My name is Helen Toby. And we had our entrepreneur of the day, who was Moses Yassin, a radio presenter who ventured into poultry business. After the break, we are going to be joined by Alam Chat, the head of diversified sector at the Stanbic Bank, to highlight more about the banking environment in South Sudan.
This is Business Weekly.
Well, this is the Business Weekly on Radio Miraya. My name is Helen Toby, and as I earlier told you, I'll be joined by Alam Chat, the head of diversified sector at the Stanbic Bank, to highlight more about the banking environment in the country and the role of women in the industry. Thank you for joining us, Alam Chat, this morning.
Thank you for having me, Helen.
Okay. We'll go straight to our topic of discussion. Now, the banking industry is undergoing a radical shift, including in South Sudan, technologically. Can you paint a picture of where we are today?
Certainly I can do that. It's very interesting, the journey of South Sudan from where we've come from way before the CPA to where we are right now. You can imagine there were no banks, brick and mortar banks at that particular time. Money could be dropped from the sky to even pay the SPLM soldiers, and to where we are right now, you can see there's many banks that are also adopting the digital transformation as well. So from being cash dependent to a lot more of doing online banking transactions. So there's a big shift there, and I think we should pat ourselves on the back, and we've actually leapfrogged on some of the ideas that have been implemented across the region and globally as well.
How will these changes in the banking industry affect the public?
There'll be a lot of impact around digitization that will come with a lot of affordability. A lot of people don't know that doing online payments, you pay less. And there'll be a lot around security as well. Your funds are secured. There'll be transparency. There'll be convenience whereby you can actually transact at the comfort of your home or whatever place that you are in. There'll also be a lot of opportunities that will come by, such as e-commerce and delivery model channels, such as agency banking. So definitely there is a lot more of positive impact that we'll see around these changes.
You just mentioned that South Sudan came a long way, you know, during the war. We didn't have banks, but now we are having so many banks around, commercial banks, forex bureaus that deal in money and all that. So what are some of the challenges in the banking industry in South Sudan?
I think a lot more of the challenges are more personalized, and you'll find that there's lack of trust in the formal financial system, whereby you'll see a lot of people will keep their money in their mattresses at home. So they need to trust the banking sector better, or accept it as part of their daily lives, you know. There's also a lot of cash dependency. You see people prefer touching money physically as opposed to transacting on e-wallet or online, which they need to also embed as part of their daily lives. There's also manual processes. Digitization can cut that. So instead of following manual processes, then they can actually adopt digitized processes. There's also around the high cost of banking. You'll find that a lot of countries, in countries nowadays, they don't open brick and mortar kind of banking systems, you know, because they're very expensive. So they've instead accepted the digital route, which breaks a lot of barriers and borders. Then that becomes a challenge. So people need to accept online as part of their daily lives as we move ahead. So you'll see that will address a lot of things. For example, when you, for us at Stanbic, we have our business online, mm-hmm. whereby our customers can actually access their balances or transact at the comfort of their home or in their offices. You see there's mobile banking, and there's mobile money also coming up through Momo's, MTN Momo, all and right. M-Gurush, which people have actually adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do offer in the bank what we call borderless banking, where you can access or deposit your money directly into your bank account in Kenya, Uganda, or Tanzania. And even the partnerships that are coming about with the banks and the fintechs as well, you see there's a lot more of bank to customer, whereby they'll be able to pull money from right in their accounts into their mobile wallet. So there's a lot that will come with digitization if we embrace it in South Sudan.
Okay, so there is need for people to know that banking is really important. You don't have to put your money under your mattresses.
Yes.
Okay, what are some of the opportunities that can be driven by technological changes in the banking sector, especially here in South Sudan?
So for us in South Sudan, I think we came late into the party. We're the youngest country in Africa, and thereabouts that comes with the digitization, there will be a lot more of global and regional integration,
mm-hmm.
that will enhance trade and socio-economic development. There'll be also promotion around foreign direct investment, where you'll see even companies such as Microsoft can be able to come in and settle in home, and even that will create opportunities of employment, you know. And also, if there's a seamless integration between the local banks, then we'll be able to do payments. We'll be able to do the payments more seamlessly. And there'll be no manual processes whereby we go and exchange checks at the central bank, but then they'll be automatically cleared through a clearing house through digitization. There's also financial inclusion through mobile money and mobile banking, and the Visa debit cards and the e-wallets, which will eliminate, definitely, as I already said, the physical branches and unnecessary cost as well. And e-commerce, we can't leave e-commerce out of this, because it's a very key player. A lot of people nowadays are opting to do their businesses online,
mm-hmm.
rather than having shops. So you'll find that with digitization, there's a lot more of opportunities.
Okay, there's so many opportunities that come with banking, and I hope people are listening out there. So what are some of the things that bank users should be aware of when making transactions?
That's a very good question. And I think first and foremost, people need to be aware that banking can actually be done online. They don't have to come to the bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cost of doing business online is much more affordable, cheaper compared to coming to a physical branch, where you'll have to, which will take a lot of your time, which you'll also be able to, you'll burn your fuel coming to the office, to the branch, instead of even actually saving it up and doing everything at the comfort of whatever place you are in. People should also be aware of fraud, both card and on online payments. A lot more of cyber crime is a very major thing in this new world of today, because globally people have embraced digitization, and that is where we're going. So how can they make more money off people?
Mm-hmm.
And that is through what? Fraud online.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of social engineering as well, whereby you'll find scammers are sending messages to people telling them, share with me your PIN, you know,
mm-hmm.
or click on this
numbers
link.
Or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what people need to know that is that the bank will never ask for your PIN. The bank will never ask you to click on certain links. Otherwise, what they'll do is you already have access to their channels. You know, you can also call customer care numbers, and they'll be able to guide you. So for us in the banking sector, we look after our client more from a holistic view. So the bank protects the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's why we give a lot more of information, create awareness, and ensure that you have a dedicated relationship manager that you can talk to, and the customer care as well.
Okay. Now, over the years, we've seen conflict in the country affecting the banking sector. We've seen banks closing down in South Sudan because of the war that happened in 2013 and 2016. So what are some of the measures that have been put in place to deal with banking during conflict situations?
I think that's a very good question, because when we go back to 2013, when the violence erupted, we never thought it could, we could come to that point. But however, we found ourselves in that situation. And this is where digitization is very key.
Mm-hmm.
So at that particular time, we were able to provide access to our services, provide access to our customers such that they can be able to access our services online through our business, for example, our business online banking. So they're able to, the mandate that is set within the bank is the same that is what is set online. So there's no level of risk. Nobody, an authorized person that can come and transact on you. And so you're actually using it from where you are, because we saw a lot more of people's flight. People mm-hmm. left the country. So people are scattered all over. So the signatories could not sign on a physical paper, but rather transact online.
Okay.
So people need to embrace that online, this online banking,
right,
basically.
And so what makes you passionate about South Sudan, and what, where do you see South Sudan in the next 10 years in terms of banking?
I think besides banking, we can actually look at South Sudan as one of Africa's rich countries with the potential to create tremendous wealth for its citizens. The country's potential to continue harnessing its natural and youthful standing is still significant, particularly in the oil and gas sector, and also through non-oil revenue collection. And there are also opportunities in industries such as financial services industry, where the banks fall in, and the manufacturing and agriculture. So for me, in 10 years, I see South Sudan will be a very viable investment destination, attracting international investors, partnering with multilaterals, private sector, and other sovereign states to promote competitive private sector. In addition, there will be at least good fiscal discipline mm-hmm. and effective management of national resources. So we'll see this, that there will be a very skilled, vibrant population, and digitization also will be enhanced, and innovation, industrialization, and women economic empowerment.
So you are currently working as the head of the diversified sector, the client coverage at the Stanbic Bank. What does your role entail? What does it mean in simple terms?
So as the term goes by, the diversified sector, I look after a very diverse portfolio. So in that portfolio, I lead a team that is dedicated to serving clients in the power and infrastructure, the telecommunications technology, media and technology, non-bank financial institutions, and the consumers and industrials as well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a very big role. So,
yeah.
And you are a woman. So what are some of the gender or women specific challenges in the banking sector?
I mean, there's a lot that women really go through, and mm-hmm. they really go unsaid. So being in the banking sector, it's no different. You'll find that women will suffer. There'll be income disparities. There's also fewer women in the managerial positions or mm-hmm. leadership positions. So actually, women empowerment is a human rights issue. It's not an issue about us against them or something.
Right.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. women deserve to be recognized. So in that, I think there's also insufficient assessment or data that is available to show. But these things really do exist. Women really do go through a lot of challenges. But I believe we can overcome those challenges if we embed them in our day-to-day goals. Such that, for example, in Stanbic Bank is actually an equal employer.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is that they're really very deliberate in terms of emancipating women fully. So there's a key goal that is put in our key performance indicators
mm-hmm.
such that is actually a deliberate drive to making change. So you have to attain that goal, you know. You have to have a certain number of women in your department, and also women are also being put in very key positions in the bank. So it's for us to be very vocal and assertive about it, and actually we're not asking for it. It is, we are it, you know. We need to be in those positions
and
as well.
We are entitled to it,
exactly.
Right. So what is your message to women who want to venture into the banking sector? Maybe others are seeing that this is a male-dominated sector. What would be your message to those women?
You know, as Maya Angelou rightfully said, each time a woman stands up for herself without knowing it possibly, without claiming it, she stands up for all women. So despite sometimes many quarters or people trying to pit women against each other, we need to continue to look at the bigger picture by mentoring and pulling up young women to ensure they're accessing the right information and opportunity to improve their lives and reach their full independence. So we need to, us as women, we need to continue showing up and showing up very well in our respective fields and ensure we are getting hard in our call for 100% equality.
Okay.
So there's still hope.
Okay, there is a lot of hope for women. So women never give up.
Never give up.
Well, thank you very much, Alam Chat, for joining us today on Radio Muriah to discuss about the banking industry in South Sudan.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Okay. Well, this is the Business Weekly program on Radio Muriah, where we bring you the latest in business and entrepreneurship by discussing opportunities and challenges in South Sudan. And today we had our entrepreneur of the day, and that was Moses Yassin, a radio presenter, who is now venturing into poultry. We are seeing his business doing well. We also had Alam Chat, the head of the diversified sector client coverage at the Stanbic Bank, and we're discussing more about the banking environment in the country and the role of the women in the industry. Until next week on the Business Weekly program, my name is Helen Toby.
Business Weekly. Talk business. Do business. Business Weekly. Bring you the latest business, economic, and financial news from around the country and tell you how they affect you. Business Weekly. Features aspiring South Sudanese entrepreneurs. Every Monday morning from 9:15 to 10 a.m. Business Weekly. Talk business. Do business. Only on Radio Muriah.